The views and opinions of the host, guests, and callers of Radio Free ARFCOM do not necessarily reflect those of AR15.com, BBS Radio, or their advertisers. When any techniques, skills, or theories are presented, they reflect the practices and opinions of the individual presenting them, but not necessarily those of Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, or BBS Radio. In all circumstances, Radio Free ARFCOM, AR15.com, and BBS Radio expressly disclaim any liability that may result in the use or misuse of any information featured in this program.
Transmission begin.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here we go.
Let's go.
All this stuff you've heard about America not wanting to fight, wanting to stay out of the war, is a lot of horse dung. Americans traditionally love to fight. All real Americans love the sting of battle.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty, or give me death.
Radio Free ARFCOM starts now.
Good evening, fellow ARFCOM members and anyone else out there listening. My name is Benjamin, and it's now time for your Radio Free ARFCOM, the Internet's voice for AR15.com, broadcasting live from South Florida. This is your show, so feel free to call us at 415-762-1161, and please visit the Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com. I'd love for you to share your thoughts and comments with us here at Radio Free ARFCOM. And remember, if you or your company is interested in supporting or sponsoring Radio Free ARFCOM, please visit the Radio Free ARFCOM forum on AR15.com. And send me an instant message to reach out to thousands of potential customers. And please visit AR15.com's site sponsor links and support Radio Free ARFCOM and AR15.com by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. Also, don't forget about the AR15.com's Special Operations Support Raffle. Tickets are only $10 and directly benefit our frontline special operators. Click the tab found at the top of your ARFCOM site announcement page. We do have a lot to cover tonight, so let's get started. As always, I encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible so I can book them ahead of time. A slight change for those of you on AR15.com. Now you can contact me via email at benjamin@AR15.com or simply send an instant message to me, Benjamin. Moving on tonight's show, we will recap last week's show. We will start off with listener comments. I'll cover the firearm news. We'll have the armed citizen. And we will have a couple of special guests tonight. Joe from the NRA will join us from his vacation and talk about his new newsletter on the AR15.com newsletter. And we'll also have specialist Lars Reichenbach. He's a veteran of Iraq, and he's here to talk to us, and we're very honored to have him as well as Joe. On last week's show, we had Joe DeBregalis from the NRA, and we mostly talked about the NRA's Eddie Eagle program, which is a firearm safety program for children that focuses on stop, don't touch, leave the area, and tell an adult. It's a great program and a great way to get involved with the NRA, as well as keeping young children safe if they do happen to come across a firearm. For more information on the Eddie Eagle program, please visit the NRA's website at nra.org. We also spoke with a special guest, Alan Gottlieb, He's a nationally known gun rights advocate, as well as the executive director for the Second Amendment Foundation at SAF.org. His group focuses on challenging anti-gun laws through carefully crafted and specially chosen lawsuits aiming at taking down unconstitutional firearm restrictions piece by piece. Thanks again to Joe and Alan for appearing. In case you folks missed last week's show and would like to catch up with either Joe or Alan and the NRA or the Second Amendment Foundation, please go to the Radio Free ARFCOM forum and click on the link for last week's archive. Thanks again to Joe and Alan again for appearing. We had some listener comments from the audience, as always. We had a couple things on here. One comment was, with the music, I feel like I'm in the Big Lebowski, the scene where they're throwing the naked chick up with the parachute at Jackie Treehorn's house. Yeah, there's not a whole lot of that going on here in my little office studio, but again, thanks for the comment. Always nice hearing that we do have an active listening audience coming to talk to me. Of course, one of our regulars says, I love the Scout M1A that we have the picture up here on, but the brake just doesn't do it. You need to get a USGI one on that bad boy. That certainly is a possibility. Our good friend and frequent poster and listener, DPMMN, posted a bunch of the info on the Ed of the Eagle program. Again, for children, if you see a gun, stop. Don't touch, leave the area, and tell an adult. And he goes on to post the history. So we certainly thank you for your contribution to the show and your continued contributions to the show. We also had our friend Iggy Ort, who suggested Alan Gottlieb in the first place and says, Ben, great interview with Alan Gottlieb. You should have him back in the future. And we certainly appreciate you contributing and helping out to suggest guests. That is certainly a great idea, and I encourage everybody to get me as many and as soon as you can guest ideas and contact info so we can have the guests that you, the listening audience, is interested in appearing on the show. We had a nice comment here. After Alan was on the show, I referred to an article where some people were commenting on having too many guns, and he, a gray guy here, comments and says, I'm not sure how many guns are too many, but if you find yourself thinking of buying a new house to be able to store them, you may be approaching that number, or you're just one lucky bastard. And he says, although I'm sure my fiance may have a different answer, and I'm sure mine would as well, as she's staring here in my office giving me dirty looks. So no more guns for the Radio Free ARFCOM host, honey. Love you. Again, continuing on, for those of you who served GD or general discussion, there was or is an epic thread going regarding a liberal magazine columnist by the name of Dan Baum, who posted his first post in GD asking about if people were, quote, caching firearms. And he posted his personal info and website on that post. Well, as soon as people researched his site and read some of his writings, he was and continues to be totally thrashed in the thread. I'm sure it comes as no surprise, as he was posting in GD. And you can visit the threads posted as links if you want in on that train wreck. I did post the links on tonight's show topics thread. However, I took a different approach. If you go to the second post, I explain it. And what I did is I politely IM'd and emailed Mr. Baum to see if he would like to come on Radio Free ARFCOM and discuss his take on the issues and perhaps not only the posters, some of the more enlightened ones on GD, but perhaps myself or Joe or some of our listening audience could potentially educate Mr. Baum on some of his mistaken assumptions regarding firearms and the firearms community. However, he declined. And here is his response. Quote, "Now this is funny. I go on air15.com, pink hat in hand, asking honest questions. And I get the shit kicked out of me and then have my membership canceled. And now you want me to go on your radio show? Please." Signed, Dan Baum. End quote. So, Mr. Baum, I politely invited you onto the program to discuss, and you said that you declined to appear, so I don't know what more, how much nicer I could have invited you on the program, sir, and I was willing to have an honest discussion with you and not bash you, as I said in my email to him, and I'll give you the email that I sent to him. Here's my email to him, quote, "Dan, I'm the host of Radio Free ARFCOM, parentheses, radio show for air15.com. I've had several requests for you to come on the show for an interview / debate. The show airs via the internet every Monday from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern. I'm not looking to bash you, but to have an honest discussion on the topic of firearms. Please let me know if you're interested. Signed, Benjamin, host, Radio Free ARFCOM." So that was my invitation to him, and there are a couple threads that you guys can check out if you're listening online, if you're following along on the Radio Free ARFCOM forum. There's some interesting stuff there regarding Mr. Baum, and I'm sure that we'll all get a kick out of that. Now we will go to the In the News segment, coming from the firearmnews.net. There are a couple interesting columns here. The one is, Washington's newest gun rules shift constitutional debate. Mark Snyder, an amateur biathlete, wanted to buy a .22 caliber bolt-action rifle for target shooting and figured the process would take about a week. After nearly 6 weeks, six visits to police departments, and $300 in fees, now mind you, this is a .22 bolt action, not a NFA item, he secured his rifle. He says, quote, "I was not expecting a free ride," said Mr. Snyder, 45, "but this is an obstacle they put in place. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned the District of Columbia's 32-year ban on handguns in 2008, a victory for the gun rights lobby that seemed to promise a more permissive era in America's long tussle over gun ownership. Since then, the city has crafted rules that are proving a new, powerful deterrent to residents who want to buy firearms. Legal gun owners must be registered by the city, a red flag for many in the gun rights community concerned that registration lists could be used to confiscate firearms. The district limits the number of bullets a gun can hold and the type of firearm residents can buy. It requires that by next year, manufacturers sell guns equipped with a special identification technology, one that hasn't been adopted by the industry." So that is more insanity from Washington, D.C., published by the Firearms News staff. Firearm Network staff a couple weeks ago. So, again, that's some pretty crazy stuff going on there. We have one article here, again, by the firearmnews.net, coming through. Give me 1 second, I'll pull it up. The call-in numbers for the show, in case you guys are interested, I just got a link here from my producer. I'm going to go ahead and copy and paste these right now into the Radio Free ARFCOM discussion form. So if you guys just want to bear with me 1 second while I pull all this up. But at any rate, there's a story coming on about the somebody selling firearms to undercover agent. Just give me 1 second and let me paste this reply in for you guys. These are the call-in numbers. Okay, and so I just put them up there for you. Anyway, back to the news. It is the man sold gun to undercover detective in Ohio. An investigation has led Ravenna police to believe a man may be in possession of illegal weapons and drugs. Ravenna police detective said Tuesday Frank Mosier, 24, was arrested Monday after a month-long investigation by our friends at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, Explosives, after special agents uncovered evidence suggesting a federal firearms violation. An undercover detective met with Mosier at his apartment and purchased a rifle for $100 cash. The detective said that Mosier told him he could get more weapons, including fully automatic firearms and grenades. Mosier also said that he would have heroin for sale later in the day, the detective reported. The gentleman was charged as a previously convicted felon in possession of a firearm in violation of federal law. So we can see now that obviously there are still going to be criminals out there trying to deal in firearms. That's obviously not what we want. That's obviously a good arrest and a good work of policing by the ATF and local detectives. So we do applaud them when they do find somebody that is willfully engaging in the illegal distribution of firearms. I'm sure many on the program would agree that those are the types of things that we need to crack down on. And it's nice to see them going after somebody who was actually doing something illegal, as opposed to our next story, which is from a website called Ammoland.com, Shooting Sports News. High Point's response to Chicago banning High Point firearms by name. The article begins by talking about the discussion of McDonald versus Chicago. As part of its new rules, the city also released a list of purportedly, quote, unsafe firearms that are not permitted to be registered within the city. MKS Supply and High Point Firearms have reviewed this list, and unfortunately, High Point products have been included in the list because they believe reasons that have nothing to do with the operation of the firearms. And this is, again, a piece written by Ammoland.com. They say, consider the source. Daly and the city of Chicago have gone out of their way to interfere with gun rights for years, and they're also unaware of any proper scientific testing that was conducted by the city to support the inclusion of High Point firearms on the city's list. In fact, High Point products have a long reputation of safety and reliability. Third, MKS Supply and High Point Firearms have unequivocally stood behind their products as being safe, reliable, and here's the key word, affordable for many years. Now, the High Point brand is obviously, to those of us who are aware of firearms, they certainly sell a very affordable product. Those of us in the firearm industry know that many of their wholesale prices are $100 or less or in that neighborhood. So these High Points are being able to be sold at very, very inexpensive prices for a brand new firearm. Yes, they're cheap. Yes, they're ugly. But they do have the reputation of being very, very reliable. And again, for people that are on limited incomes, these are firearms that are potentially life-saving devices because of the fact that a person can go into a firearm retailer, such as the store that I work in, and purchase one of these High Points. They're not going to break the bank. They're not going to take food out of the mouths of their children while at the same time giving them the ability to have a firearm for personal protection. So while many of us in the community that have, you know, why would I say more quality or more recognizable brands may snicker at the thought of a High Point, let's remember that not everybody is in very good economic times in this country right now. And everybody, as I'm sure the listening audience will agree, deserves the right to purchase a firearm at whatever cost for self-protection, whether that be $100 or $1,000. So here we have the city of Chicago going after a firearm, in my estimation, because it's targeted towards residents, low-income residents, and people that may not have the best economic wherewithal but still live in areas considered targets for potential violence because of the low income and areas of Chicago. So an interesting take on that. Here we have another story. This is one that is actually posted from – they actually mention ARFCOM and AR15.com, and this article was actually written by our friend Joe DeBergelis on the NRA, and we're going to go over this for AR15.com in the newsletter and talk to Joe a little bit about this article. But, again, nice to see that AR15.com or ARFCOM, as we all know it, is circulating its way around the Internet as the largest firearms site out there. Going to the NRA Institute for Legislative Action news, we talked a little bit earlier on last week's program that in regards to voting, we all are trying to make sure that we spread the message, and in particular, we'll mention it again, but the gun rights amendment is on the November ballot in Kansas, so make sure that, you know, what they're trying to do is make sure that the constitutional amendment guarantees the right of Kansans to keep and bear arms, so make sure that you get out and vote if you're in that area to make sure that you can get out and vote and encourage your friends and neighbors and any relatives you have into the area of Kansas. I have an interesting article here coming from STL Today, that's St. Louis Today, and it's by Kathy Etling, and it's a special to the Post-Dispatch. Hunters always portrayed as the villains. And here's her lead. Would you like to wow your friends with your ability to predict who, in a TV crime or legal drama, will eventually be found to be the killer, all-around bad guy or gal? Well, just zero in on anyone who is, one, a hunter, two, has mounted deer or taxidermy animals hanging on the walls, or three, wearing fur. Just like that, and you have nailed down the identity of the TV villain probably 99 times out of 100. TV characters who also hunted were once commonplace, from Andy Griffith's Ben Matlock, Sam Waterston's character in I'll Fly Away, and even Bob Newhart in Newhart. A TV character who hunted was presented to the viewing audience as an everyman. Today, the hunter or fur wearer is most often depicted as the lowest of the low, a character capable of any evil. She goes on to point out in her article, hunters and anglers do foot the bill for 95% of the wildlife conservation work being done today, and including, she goes on to talk about the taxes and that they go from the sale of pistols and revolvers and firearms and bows and arrows and accessories to pay willingly for the conservation efforts. She goes on to say, TV scriptwriters, producers, and directors, for the most part, live in Hollywood and New York City, which obviously neither has a large population of hunters. She goes on to discuss this in detail. Furthermore, if you guys are interested in following that story further and reading the rest, it's stltoday.com, but the point is that these big city, you know, writers and screen script writers and editors and whatnot are not in connection with the actual reality that hunters and firearms owners in general are among the most law-abiding of citizens out there. So let's try to do what we can to change the tide of that, and if you want to vote with your wallets, that's what I suggest. If you know of actors and actresses and producers and screenwriters that are portraying hunters and firearms owners in general in a negative light, that we can certainly vote with our wallets and not be contributing to them economically, and support them and support people who are more in line with our cause and the cause of freedom, and do show us firearm owners and hunters in a more positive light. So make sure you do your research next time you go see that favorite movie, and make sure that you're not supporting somebody who is against the cause of firearms freedom in the country. Moving on to Armed Citizen. We read this every week. It's brought to us by the NRA ILA. This one is coming out of the Oak Ridger from Oak Ridge, Virginia. Two armed robbers kicked in the door of a residence in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, entered the bedroom of one of the occupants and ordered the resident to give it up. An occupant in another room heard the commotion, retrieved a handgun, and confronted the criminals. Upon seeing the armed occupant, the criminals fled, one into a bathroom and the other outside the house. The criminal in the bathroom remained there until police arrived. He was later charged with aggravated burglary. So good on the Armed Citizen. We always like that column because it does reflect the reality in that there are thousands upon thousands of cases that are very, very lightly reported or missed by the larger mainstream media in general that show firearms being used for self-defense and in a positive manner. So let's continue to try to get the word out that firearms are always, for the most part, we're able to use them in a positive manner. As many of you know, you sports fans out there, the NFL season is rapidly approaching. I'm sure many of you have been already watching your preseason games for your favorite teams. That means fantasy football season is here as well. And I joined the Beans versus No Beans ARFCOM Fantasy League. And for those of you in the league, make sure you tune in every week to Radio Free ARFCOM, as I'll be doing a segment on the league here on the show. Also, given the popularity of fantasy football, I'd certainly welcome guests or callers on the show to discuss their take on this year's NFL's season and the players and your fantasy leagues and your predictions as well. And let's see if you guys want to talk a little bit of sports. I know there's thousands of sports shows out there, but we're going to try to do our little ARFCOM thing here with it and certainly have fun with that league. I spent the weekend in Tallahassee, Florida, at the annual Florida Outdoor Writers Association Conference. It's a conference held every year for members of the Florida Outdoor Writers Association, which is a group of professional outdoor journalists. You can look at www.fowa.org. I posted the link on the show topics. I became a member of that organization back in 2004 when I primarily focused on my career as a fishing magazine editor, writer, and photographer, as well as a regular guest host on a fishing radio program here in Stuart, Florida. Since then, my involvement with journalism, and in particular outdoor journalism, has shifted. I spent 2 years on the board of directors for the organization, that's the Florida Outdoor Writers Association, working on crafting policy to steer the organization forward through some of the newer media, such as the internet videos, websites, etc. In the past 2 years, as my career has shifted more towards firearms, so too has the focus of my journalism shifted in the same direction. Lately, I've been spending time working on my own websites, as well as some sites for clients. My website focuses on free video content featuring various segments on firearms, as well as other subject material. You can visit the link at FloridaShootingVideosOnline.com for a taste of some of the stuff that I do. I'll have to admit that I haven't posted any new videos since Mother's Day, but I've just been so busy doing NRA instruction and working at the range that I haven't had any time to do any work for my own site. Speaking of working at the gun range, I also designed the site for Okeechobee Shooting Sports at www.okshooting.com. Regular listeners may recognize that name, as I've interviewed the owner, Jeff Waite, here on Radio Free ARFCOM a couple weeks ago. And I also work at that same range part-time. Well, at least I did before I injured my back. And I'm looking forward to more training and discussion once, and excuse me, instruction once I heal. But I digress. I also designed the website for American Defense Guns and Ammo, which is the shop where I work during the day. And that site is AmericanDefenseGunsAndAmmo.com. And when I say design these sites, I do everything from shoot the photos and videos to write the copy to arrange and publish the content on the web. I mention all this because the type of work that is involved in creating this media is not what many people would consider traditional journalism. However, at the awards banquet at this year's Florida Outdoor Writers Association conference, I took home awards for two of these projects. I took third place in the self-promotion category for my website, FloridaShootingVideosOnline.com, and took second place in the electronic media category for the gun store's website, AmericanDefenseGunsAndAmmo.com. And I mention this because if there's any of our listening audience out there that are aspiring journalists, even non-traditional journalists, and need help with your material, whether it be writing copy, gathering photos, or shooting videos, please send me an IM or an email, and I'd be happy to help you. I'd like to conclude by saying that the sites I create all have one thing in common. So far, they all feature firearms as the prime subject material. So I have to be grateful and give a big thanks to the NRA for fighting for not just mine, but all of our firearms freedoms. Without that freedom, none of this would be possible. And with that in mind, our first guest, as always, is Joe DeBurgles from the NRA. Welcome back, Joe. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Right, Ben. Great week, and glad to be here as always.
Excellent. Now, one of the things that I believe I forgot to mention, but many of you, many of our listeners may have found their inboxes, the AR15.com newsletter. And for those of us that may not be familiar with it in the listening audience, it is this is actually the second edition that just came out, and the staff members and the writers of the AR15.com newsletter have a lot of things that are involved with the site, whether it be the thread tracking, the bookmark features, the travel services. But as I was scrolling through, we got some training tips. And then you, sir, have a column on here titled ARFCOM and the Future of the Right to Keep and Bear Arms. Tell me a little bit about that effort of not only the column you wrote, but how you're becoming even further involved with AR15.com and your efforts to work with them.
Sure, Ben. What we're trying to do here at ARFCOM is continually reach out to not only our membership, but those who are interested in the site and what we have to offer in a variety of exciting ways. From our advances in technology on the site to now the newsletter, we try to be on the cutting edge of information and this dispersal around the people that may be involved. We've got a lot of exciting advancements to come and a lot of exciting announcements, which unfortunately I'm not at liberty to talk about tonight. But the whole effort is to try to solidify what we do as a site, put it on paper so they can basically have a reference back to ARFCOM, and at the same time bring some timely news to our membership as well as those who are identify as people who enjoy the AR platform or freedom and rights. So the Avila family, Juan and Edward and Jorge and Ed Sr., are constantly looking to give another enhanced benefit of membership. So as a result of that, we sat down and came up with a newsletter. And this is something we're going to be continuing to improve. There's a lot of good offers on the website itself or on the newsletter. So it's something we came forward. It's just another way to reach out to the membership and those so inclined with our interests. The article, Ben, came about as something where have a continuation of our conversations the last couple of weeks about what we can do here in ARFCOM to ensure that our rights are secured and our pursuits are there for future generations. So as you will see, if you read through the article, it's basically an introduction as to what we're going to do. We're going to have a variety of upcoming ideas and topics. At the same time, try to drive people to register to vote through triggerourvote.com, as well as get people involved in a variety of things that are out there when it comes to the NRA and the shooting sports.
One of the things I mentioned in my monologue was the non-traditional media and things like the web and things like electronic newsletters, and obviously AR15.com is on the cutting edge, and you talk about that in your second paragraph here. It says, in many ways, the site represents the future of gun ownership in America. It's a blend of old and new technology. And when you say that this site represents the future of gun ownership in America, can you expand upon that sentiment a little bit and talk to the listeners about where that comes from and where your mindset is and where you think the future might be in the future of gun ownership for Americans?
Well, basically, the mindset behind the whole article is to engage our readership. As I promised when I ran for the board of the NRA, that I would take the ARFCOM banner and run with it the best I can, lead from the front. ARFCOM, the ethos of the membership is that of we want to enjoy our rights. We want to enjoy the evil black rifle. And I think we've accomplished that. So when we look at going forward and capturing that essence, that spirit, that whole type of mentality that ARFCOM portrays out there, we're trying to push that forward into the future. So when we sit there and come against a legislative initiative which will outlaw because it looks mean, or when we sit there and we see an affront to our rights by the serialization of individual rounds of ammunition, or when we see somebody trying to take something to the United Nations and to abridge our constitutional rights, we need to take it for everywhere. We did it with the evil black rifles. We did the AR platform. It is very, very popular, as I mentioned later in the article. We've done it. We turned the corner on that. We recreate with it. We protect our homes with it. We train with the AR platform. 5 years ago, that wasn't the case. There was pockets of it, but most of it was either law enforcement, military communities. There's some diehards, especially right here at AR15.com, who were ahead of the curve. But now we need to go forward and make sure that there's the new platforms coming forward. We're trying to engage more people in shooting the weapon of our enemies, the AK, which I personally think is a fantastic platform. If you remember the 5.7, stuff about that. Unfortunately, the coward in Fort Hood used that as one of his principal sidearms when he went into assault the innocents there on the fort. It's one of these things where we need to ensure that they don't start labeling a certain weapons platform or a certain type of firearm. That's what I meant by it. Again, move forward. It's always going forward, always inching the ball closer to the goal line.
One of the things that is frequently discussed on AR15.com, and I think is potentially one of the biggest challenges, is there's not often, and it's increased, but there's not often times that I'm sure many AR15.com members have met face-to-face other AR15.com members. I've met a few, but I think that one of the challenges is that everybody thinks that because it's an internet community that it's great to talk about a lot of this stuff on the site and on the forums, and people are always ready to moan and complain about what can be done or what can't be done. And how do we coalesce from an internet presence as the largest firearms community into something that can actually be tangible and produce tangible results in the real world?
Well, Ben, I think we already have broached that, and we are producing tangible results. Everybody that I've met who's been affiliated with ARFCOM, from the members to the ownership, to the vendors, have been in the same spirit. Sit down, it'd be a SHOT Show, NRA annual meeting, variety of shoots throughout the country. It's very simple to identify somebody who affiliates himself with ARFCOM. You know, normally they're wearing some type of our logo, the boldface logo. And I think we're there. We're there. What we need to understand is when we post on a thread, and everybody, it's a free country, so you can post what you like, but it's being looked at. We have, you know, any given time, there's a number of lurkers out there from the opposition who's taking everything that we say, analyzing it, printing it out, and putting it into a variety of political machine operations out there to see how they can come at us and what have you. As the largest gun forum in the nation, when you're a leader, you're going to have to be willing to take the shots. So I think we're getting the tangible results we all desire. It's a matter of harnessing a little bit more. I think that's where the outreach in the newsletter. And then taking next steps as we go forward, which are in the planning stage now, that are going to bring us to different levels of mass communication plus media scrutiny. With success comes that. So we always got to be careful of that. But if we all just keep going forward, I highly suggest people becoming a team member. It's very, very reasonable. If you enjoy being an ARFCOM, join. A few dollars, I understand, but it's no more than a couple beers, if you look at it that way. Join ARFCOM, support. You're going to have a lot of good things coming in the future. And we can, the more and more we grow, the better we become with our lockstep ally, the NRA, become a juggernaut in the field. So we're doing good things.
You always see I was talking about this conference that I attend, and I go there every year, and I really noticed in the last couple of years the leaps and bounds that media and communications and you know, I consider what I do in the firearms community as a form of outdoor communication, obviously. I mean, being that firearms sports for the most part is an outdoor type of, you know, communication. You know, but in the bigger picture, when I look at other outdoor communicators that are, you know, of the professional level, they've really embraced in the last couple of years since I've been a member, the technology, and it's growing in all kinds of different directions. You know, my websites, it's all content-based, and AR15.com, it's member-based, and I think there's a lot of very cool things going around that are new and exciting, and there's different ways to harness the internet, and I think that one of the great things about AR15.com and about the membership is that there's always opportunities for everybody to contribute. When John asked me to take over this show, that was a great opportunity, and I think that one of the messages that maybe potentially the ARFCOM community needs to hear is that there are definitely ways that they can contribute.
Most certainly, Ben. We're constantly looking for people to step forward, step into the breach, and help us out. I communicate through IM continuously through the day, on a daily basis almost. It's something where if there's an interest, we like to harness the energy and the enthusiasm, and put that individual on point on whatever we feel that we can. The Avila family do a great job. It's just a matter of getting everything moving forward. And then there hasn't been one time, Ben, anything we've done that hasn't been first class, always the best possible foot forward. So that's what we're trying to do. Sometimes we're a little cautious and sometimes we're slow, but we get it there. If there's anybody out there who wants to become involved, A, become a team member, support the site, and B, if they feel the family is very accessible on the site, they can IM me as well. Listen to Radio Free ARFCOM. It's another way. Contribute. Help us get vendors to advertise. Make guest suggestions. If there's something that you feel we can improve the show, we'll definitely do that. We're only as good as our membership. And we have a very strong, very dedicated membership. So if there's something else that we can do, you know, it's very simple, Ben, to criticize. I understand that there's an old saw that says it might take $1 million for somebody to say something positive about something because you very rarely hear it. And it's free to sit there and argue with someone or to complain about somebody. So if we sit there, if you find something, hey, let us know. Constructive criticism is fine. Destructive is a waste of threat space. So let's get together. Let's go forward. I think we do a great job, especially what's coming up for the legislative side of things. As we always try to drive home, register those you know who are not registered to vote. Then when it's time, take that whole 5 minutes to go cast your ballot. Put a sign out on your front lawn. Volunteer to become an NRA frontline volunteer. It's free. Go down to your local, whatever party you affiliate with, and volunteer for your pro-gun candidate. Do these little things. You can come back and report it on ARFCOM. You know, if you're successful, I'm sure, Ben, that you'll interview that individual, and we can have a election night kind of thing going on. There's a variety of possibilities. We just need to ignite our base. And there's no stronger force out there, Ben, I'll argue with anybody who says there isn't, than Team ARFCOM. Is there anything we can do, from all the fundraising we do to all the advocacy we do to all the good cheer and benevolent things that we do for those of us who are having a bad day or a bad year or somebody afflicted in our family? There's no better family than ARFCOM. So if we turn into a positive force, there's nothing we can't do.
Yeah, I certainly agree. And I just want to give a shout-out here real quick to a gentleman named Jay Gaddis. He posted in the thread for tonight. He says, it's my first show. He's going to go to iTunes and start downloading some back issues. So welcome to the program. And, you know, as we say, we always like to have new members. And I really like hearing that people, you know, I really encourage those of you that are listening to just post and just let us know that you're out there. Even if you just want to say, hey, I'm listening, because the feedback is really important. I mean, we see, I'm looking at the number right here on the top, and we've got, you know, 3,700 people on the site online right now. You know, that's a big number, and if we can harness those numbers and we can get some tangible results as far as if you're listening and you can just take 30 seconds to post that you're listening, and then we can, you know, we can use the power of this show just like we can use the power of the rest of the website to be able to generate not only positive, you know, vibes for the firearms community in general, but then we'll be able to get people on this show that'll be say, hey, you know, and they say, how many listeners do you have at one time? And if everybody that has an ARFCOM membership tuned in and said, yeah, I'm listening, that's a pretty powerful audience that we have the potential to harness. And I think we all should try to really use what we can out of the site to help to promote, you know, things that are of concerns to all the membership.
Most certainly. I mean, we're, I'll say it before, I'll say it again. The people at ARFCOM, on ARFCOM, and who believe in ARFCOM are very dynamic. There's really nothing we can't do. And if you look at a variety of threads out there and a variety of causes that we as members of ARFCOM have completed, I continue to go forward. From our assistance to the servicemen and women out there, Ramsey's Militia does a fantastic job getting much-needed supplies and kind of comfort items to all our servicemen and women. That's been ongoing for years. We've got a variety of things. We have our Special Operators Fundraiser going on now. There was a variety of different other things that we've done in support of law enforcement officers or sick children. And then we look at, you can harness all that and come forward and take a few extra minutes as opposed to, you know, railing on something for a thread if a thread to thread and turn it into a negative into a positive. We can really get some good things going. I mean, and it's just great. And those who came before me who have been on this site, like Dan Meyer, my good buddy, and he's been here forever, it's one of these things where they know from whence we came from and they know where we're going. So it's something where if we just all take a few minutes, well, it adds up to be quite a bit. So the momentum's building, Ben. It really is. It's going to be an exciting fall, and we'll go on. And I predict big things in November, as about everybody else out there. But it's going to be it's a good time to be around and a good time to be engaged in the process.
One of the things, just going back real quick to the newsletter, I see here we have got an update since last month, we have already raised enough for 20 Special Forces operators to receive their axes. Special thanks to them all, and we'll include the information here for the new subscribers. But for those of you that are just tuning in or aren't familiar with it, make sure that you guys all not only read the newsletter, but also click on the link for this special fund for the special operators. And I know we talked about this, but it's been a couple weeks, Joe. Just in the newsletter, for the people that may not have heard about it, tell us again about the Special Operations Support Raffle and these combat axes, just for people that may not, you know, have gotten an opportunity to donate just yet.
Most certainly. We have an ongoing fund that is put in place for about a month and a half, 2 months now, where we're raising funds for the special operators, specifically those of Delta Detachment, and Dev Group, which is SEAL Team 6, in the Navy. So these are friends of ARFCOM. They're members of both respective groups that myself, as well as the Avila family, identify with, have met with, and support on an ongoing basis. And what we've done, there's a great bladesman, master craftsman, Dan Winkler in North Carolina, that creates crafts to order specific fraternal battle axes and breaching implements for different elements of those two special operation groups or teams, if you will. And they're all identified in the thread. I invite everybody to go out there and take a look at the thread and see what we're all about. And every dime raised goes towards the purchase of these battle axes or breaching implements. These warriors will actually carry these items into battle. They will actually be used as part of their kit. The way they're basically awarded to the team members, once they get into the elite groups, the team leaders decide as to what operator receives or when the operator receives this fraternal item. This signifies, this item that we're raising funds for, that you've actually made the team. They basically, you know, you pin the trident on your SEAL and you get into the dev group. If you take another test and you go through a different variety of physical tests, agility tests, and a whole bunch of tests. These guys are outstanding. But their real passing, if you will, or their achievement is when their team leader says, okay, now you're one of us, you get this. And it means so much to these operators that once they separate from the teams or they leave the service, this is one of the most treasured items they ever have. And it really means a lot to them. We're working on bringing one or two of the operators on if we can to talk. We can't really identify what they do, where they are. So I don't know how much that will bring to the whole discussion on it then, but I just got off the phone with one of my dear friends yesterday. Unfortunately, he called me to report that one of our mutual friends was KIA in Afghanistan. So I'm kind of reeling from that last day and a half here. But they're out there, and they appreciate everything we're doing. And what he tells me every single time, and it's worth repeating, he says, Joe, thank you for what you're doing, not just me, but all of us in ARFCOM, for and in the defense of our freedoms, Ben. Because when they come back, they're out there fighting for us in a foreign land. When they come back, they want to have the rights they're fighting for sustained. And that's because of the advocacy of you, Ben, myself, and a whole lot of people throughout this country who believe in freedom. So we can always sit there on a thread and you know, say this or say that, or we shouldn't do this or we shouldn't do that, or the NRA is this or the NRA is that. But bottom line is, if you listen to these people, they're very, very grateful. Well, we should be grateful to them. They're grateful to us for what we do. So in a nutshell, that's what the Operators Fund's all about. We've gathered enough money. We collected enough money now for 20 of these battle axes or breaching implements. It's only scratching the surface. It's going to go ongoing probably into the fall. But we just wanted to give a glimpse of where we are in the fundraising process.
And for those of you out there thinking about donating, the minimum donation is $10. It's not a whole lot, and it certainly would go to the best of the best that are out there. And we do appreciate everybody out there that's serving, and but we certainly want to extend a special thanks to those individuals who have taken the time and the energy and the intense dedication to make the cut of these very elite level operator type groups. And so that's certainly important to everybody, not only out there serving, but also it's important to us that are trying to, like Joe said, fight for these individuals' rights. So that way, you know, many of these individuals, they're firearm fans as well. They want to be able to come home and hunt and to fish and to do all these activities in the outdoors. And in particular, if they have a love of the shooting sports, like many of us, we want to be able to make sure that they have the ability to do that. And I think that's where the importance of the relationship between the NRA and AR15.com comes into play, because between the two organizations, we're really the ones that are trying to get out there. I mean, there are other ones out there. I don't want to knock Allen at the Second Amendment Foundation or any other freedom-loving groups, but again, we need to make sure that we keep a positive mindset. Yeah, there's always the haters out there that are gonna bash somebody or another, but there's really no point to that. You know, we need to work together as opposed to being divisive. And what are some of the ways, Joe, that if somebody wants a little bit of more info, whether it be working with the NRA or with AR15.com, where can they go, and what are some of the things they can do to try to facilitate that?
Well, as always, I the first reference I give anyone is NRAILA.org. Sign up for the Freedom Alerts. You can become a grassroots volunteer if you'd like, which is all free. You can become as active or inactive, if you will, as you want. If you want to step it up a little bit, there's a program called the Election Volunteer Coordinator, EVC program. And what that is basically, as we all know, there's congressional districts in every one state. And you're the representative during the electoral process for the NRA-ILA grassroots division to identify pro-gun candidates and then assist them. So let's say, Ben, you volunteer to be a grassroots coordinator, or grassroots frontline volunteer. The election volunteer coordinator would contact you. Hey, listen, John Smith is running congressional district number one. We really need you. Indicated you want to help out. He's pro-gun, he's pro-NRA, or he's pro-freedom. Would you care to walk the precinct on his behalf, or would you care to have a sign in your front yard? Would you like to come to the office and help him make telephone calls? That type of thing. So we concentrate our forces and go out there, and sometimes it's a pretty good time. So that's the first place. The next is to become more involved. Whatever media outlet, start watching, start reading. Excuse me. ARFCOM has fantastic resources. Take a look at it on the threads, see what it is. There's a whole bunch of links. All the membership put up some good ones. There's some bad ones out there as well, but I think we're all at a level where we can discern between the good and the bad. Take a look at different things. And then, by all means, the most important thing to do this November, and I'll keep saying it until the day after Election Day, is to register to vote if you're not, and vote if you are. You have to send the message. We have to send the message. It doesn't cost you anything. Let's go out there and vote. So that's basically in a nutshell what we can do to harness both ARFCOM and NRA's influence. I mean, we have Radio Free ARFCOM. Keep listening to us every Monday. We'll try to do our very best. You can listen to NRANews.com and get, on a daily basis, updates. There's a variety of sources that are pro-gun, pro-freedom, pro-Second Amendment. Alan Gottlieb's doing a fantastic job. We work hand-in-hand with the Second Amendment Foundation. I'm a life member of it. Alan, Joe Tartaro from New Gun Week, fantastic people and resources. Right there on the front lines. I mean, there's all these groups should be working together. What I don't like, Alan, is when one stands out and starts sniping at the other. Because all we're doing is playing into the hands of the almost non-existent Brady Bunch and play into the propaganda of the mayors against illegal guns which is fast supplanting the Brady campaign as the number one anti-gun organization in the country. We don't need that. We can keep it in-house. We can disagree. We can do all that kind of stuff. But support these organizations. I'm a member of a life member of a great many of them. I believe in different types of ideas, and I believe in different types of opinions. But overall, the NRA is the leader. That's why I ran for the board.
And as Joe made the point better than I can, but it's very essential that we, whether or not you want to join one organization or join none of them or join all of them, you really can't complain if you're not being involved with these organizations, because if they're doing something it's very easy to sit back in your chair and your computer and point fingers and say, well, you're not doing this or that. My challenge to those of you who would do that would be, well, then what have you done? And so unless you're out there actually fighting the fight like many of us are and being directly involved and volunteering and doing it not for, you know, fame or financial gain or anything else like that, but doing it for the love of freedom, then you really have no reason to complain. And so, again, you know, there's a lot of people out there that they can't participate in some of this stuff because if just what I'm thinking is our soldiers. I mean, these men and women that are overseas, you know, we need to be the voice for them and remember that it's their sacrifice that not only gives us freedom, but we need to be able to try to defend their freedom as well. Any last words, Joe, before we move on to our next segment real quick?
Well, Ben, as always, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me this week. I think the show's getting better each and every passing week. I'm there. If anybody needs to talk to me, they can IM me, direct action. I'd be more than happy to assist you all I can. You have a great show, Ben.
Thank you, Joe, and again, we do appreciate it. As we were just discussing, the men and women of the military are certainly the ones that we want to thank for defending those freedoms, and I know Joe would say the same thing, that we will fight as hard as we can here back at home to preserve their rights. And speaking of that, our next guest is going to be one of our very own ARFCOM members, and the idea for this next segment came to me not only while I was surfing through the various boards on ARFCOM, but last week one of the members IM'd me during the show and said, hey, we're tuning in live here from Iraq. And I thought, well, that was just really, really cool. And I thought, you know, wow, isn't that something? And I know that the guys and gals over there serving probably wouldn't be very available for the show to conduct it live. However, my idea was to talk to some of the recent members of the services and the recent veterans. So I posted in the Deployed and the Hall of Heroes forums asking for current military as well as veterans who would like to share some of their experiences with the Radio Free ARFCOM audience. And I would really like to make this into a regular segment, talking with the true heroes of AR15.com, the men and women who are the names and faces that make up the greatest military in the world. Our first guest in this segment is Specialist Lars Reichenbach, an AR15.com member who was an infantryman in the U.S. Army. He was deployed in Iraq from 2008 to 2009, and he's here on Radio Free ARFCOM to talk about some of his experiences in Iraq. Welcome, Lars, and it is an honor and a privilege to have you on Radio Free ARFCOM, and thank you for your service. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Ben.
Sure. You put in your message to me that you were deployed from October 2009. And can you tell us a little bit about about your deployment and about what your specialty is and what were some of the things that you've done in Iraq?
Yeah, sure. Well, pretty much I'm in the National Guard unit, so when we get called up, we normally get pretty lame missions compared to the active duty guys. They're the ones kicking down the doors and stuff. So we were doing convoy security, convoy logistic patrols in northern Iraq. So pretty much it was a never-ending road trip. you'd get up in the morning, get your truck ready, head out to the yard, pick up the trucks you're going to escort, and then take them across the country. And sometimes it was boring as all hell, and sometimes, you know, you got a little bit of fun.
And take me through that process. I guess sort of start at the beginning and say, you know, you're in the National Guard. And you get the call and sort of tell me about what your thoughts and your feelings were going forward and getting ready to be deployed and then actually putting your boots in the sand for the first time.
Well, they actually get you a warning order pretty far out before you even deploy. We knew we were going to get deployed about a year and a half before we actually took off on the plane. So training schedule changed. I have to say the training that we did wasn't really applicable. A lot of our soldiers are prior active duty with previous deployments, so they're pretty hard charters. A lot of the training we were doing was aimed towards like mouth and, you know, kicking in doors, doing all that stuff, and we ended up doing none of that overseas. You know, we just kind of sat in our trucks. So we got the warning order. We did all of our warrior tests. Warrior tests are a generic list of skills that all soldiers are supposed to be able to do from the Army. We just hammered those in, did those over and over again, and we got to our mob station. Training at the mob station was, I guess, as effective as possible it could be in Wisconsin for Iraq. You know, it wasn't really where I would send troops to prepare for desert combat, but that's where we went. And some of the training was pretty great. Anything that was mounted on trucks was really relevant. But, I mean, again, we did a lot of stuff that really we trained for things that we never got to do. When we got to Kuwait, my first thought was that it was sort of surreal. There was a KFC there. There was a Starbucks, a gigantic PX like a mall, and I was thinking, hey, this ain't that bad. We got to Iraq, and my thought was that this is nothing like I thought it would be. You know, you see the TV shows, you see the pictures, and most people are in the cities. My base, Kara, was an airfield literally in the middle of northern Iraq, like the middle of nothing. It was just a wasteland. So you look around and like, well, this is what I'm going to be seeing for the next year.
Right, and going back to some of that training, like what type of vehicles, and you said truck-mounted equipment, what are some of the things that you trained on and some of the things that you trained for prior to your deployment and some of the things that you thought were good and maybe some of the, you said that some of the stuff you obviously trained for stuff that wouldn't apply, but the stuff on the trucks and the vehicles, what were some of those items and equipment that you guys got to use?
Well, we trained on M1114 Humvees, which are like the first generation of armor Humvees, but when we actually got into country, we fell onto MRAPs. There's so many different types of MRAPs. The ones we got mainly were Cayman MRAPs, which are fantastic trucks. They're like gigantic, like a semi-truck with an armored cab on it with people sitting in the back. And unfortunately, we didn't get any training on that until we actually got in theater. We also got these vehicles called ASVs, which anybody who's ridden one can tell you kind of sucks. I mean, crew protection, I guess they're all right, but when they roll over, they cut their gunners in half, and they don't even give you round for the 40 mic grenade launchers, so it's kind of a uncomfortable ride, and yeah, just ASVs weren't our favorite. So like, the training we got wasn't actually for the trucks that we were actually using in country, so that was kind of lame.
And then, so you get to this air base in Iraq, and tell me about when you arrived, and you said it's just a wasteland, and tell me about, I mean, did it really take you by surprise, just the desolation of it, and describe what your background is in regard to where you're from, and then how you sort of had to take that first look around and you had the weather conditions, and how did that affect your body and your thought process and all that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I'm from San Jose, California. I'm from a pretty metropolitan area. You know, it's a pretty, pretty dense city. We got a million people here. So stepping off the plane and seeing absolutely nothing was kind of a different thing for me. The weather there, we got there in October, was surprisingly cold. I mean, from November to about March, it just didn't stop raining. It came down, and the ground is so hard there that the water wouldn't seep through. It just was like lakes. Everywhere is a lake. So that was actually one of the worst parts of my day, was having to walk across this field to go to the motor pool, because it was like a gigantic mud puddle, and then you had to go clean a room up and all that. It was, I mean, yeah, it was a hassle of the mud. Pretty much anyone who's been to Iraq can tell you that there's small urban centers and there's a big cities up and down Route Tampa, but for the rest of the park from southern Iraq, it's all, you know, traditional desert. Once you get up north, it's all just hard dirt everywhere. I mean, there's no plants, there's no plant life. It's just solid dirt and trash.
Wow. And then I just wanted to say that for those of you in the listening audience, let me give you the call-in number. It's 530-413-4511. That's line A. But if you look on the thread as we're going now for the Radio Free ARFCOM show schedule for August 23rd, I have all the call-in numbers posted. If you'd like to ask Lars any questions, I'm sure I'd like to hear some from the audience. But anyway, continuing on, so you're in country, and you know you've got this desolation, and then tell me about your first mission and what your, I guess, your nerves, your state of mind. What were you thinking when the first time they told you, okay, this is the real thing, we gotta set you out on these trucks, and I guess also describe what your actual duty was as far as in that convoy and what you're supposed to be doing with it.
Well, I mean, the first mission almost everyone does when we get in theaters, it's called a left seat, right seat ride. So the people you're replacing, they take you out and they show you, you know, what's up. They show you how to do your job pretty much. My job, I was actually used as a medic. I'm an infantryman, but I'm a paramedic in the civilian world. So my unit, who were short on medics, they used me as their medic. So pretty much I sat in the back of the truck that mission. I don't really, my mental state was, hey, this is pretty cool. This is what Iraq looks like. You know, I wasn't really too worried. It was my first time in country, and I've had the horror stories. My best friend was third ID in OIF-1. He was the second tank at Baghdad. But from the news and stuff I was reading, I wasn't really expecting to go on a Thunder Run or anything. It was just kind of like a neat kind of, I felt like a tourist more than anything. And so I was in the back of the truck, and we took the turn off of the FOB road and got on Route Tampa. And that was kind of exciting because I heard so much about Tampa, and I didn't realize that it was actually the road that went all the way from Turkey to Kuwait. So I thought it was kind of like, wow, cool, I'm on this place everyone talks about. And we rode on that for a couple hours, and I looked out the windows and realized there's absolutely nothing out there. Like I said, I mean, where we were at was pretty desolate until we hit a town called Tel Afar. And that was actually kind of impressive because during the initial invasion, the 101st took that place over, and they went to town. Like either side of the route was just all the buildings were completely destroyed. And I remember the one thing that really struck me as funny was the Iraqis just continued living in these destroyed buildings. Like their houses were made of stone, and there were stones all over the place, but they didn't fix their houses. They just left them crumbled with, you know, bowl holes in them and stuff. And that's just, I don't know, seemed different to me.
Yeah, it sounds like something out of, Mad Max or one of the post-apocalyptic movies.
Yeah.
I guess that would be an adequate description. Because, I mean, for them, yeah.
Yeah, that's normal life for them. For us, you know, it definitely looks like something hit the fan. Everything, I mean, every large city, you can see the scars of the invasion. You can see the post-invasion. You can see, you know, IED craters everywhere. There's holes in almost every building, somewhere or another. So, I mean, it's kind of different.
Right. And then what after you got through your initial mission, what was your typical mission like? And then what was just your, you know, your normal experience like there with your unit, and you know, how often did you guys go out and all that sort of thing?
Our operation tempo was kind of slow towards the end because they started doing the handoff. When we first got there, we were doing about 3 missions a week. So a mission started off where we would go to the motor pool, we'd prep our trucks, we'd go QAQC, which is make sure everything's all good, the mechanics would check everything, and we'd mount our guns, go down to a place called Cliff RC where we'd get our mission briefing. And those were always fun because you get intelligence in there that tell you some crazy wild story, this stuff that's supposed to happen that never did. And from there, we'd head on out and pick up the KDR trucks, whatever transportation company we were taking, and TCNs, which are third country nationals. They're people from other countries that come and work for KDR and haul stuff. And after that, we'd SD, be on the road, and depending where we were going, it could be anywhere from 2 to 8 hours on the road. And once we got to the destination, we'd say sayonara to everyone, get some sleep, and the next morning start all over and go back home.
And so basically you guys were guarding the transportation of civilian contractors or military, actual military personnel, or both?
Everything. We had, transportation companies that we take. By that I mean like actual U.S. Army transportation. We'd have KDR people, and then the TCN.
Okay, so I just wanted to clarify for everybody out there. And then you say what are some of the things that you encountered, or was it just like driving through absolute nothingness, or what were some of the interesting things, I guess, that you may not have expected as you're traveling on these like long convoys?
Well, we were in northern Iraq, so some of our convoys would take us to Kurdistan. And one of the funniest things was they had these billboards for this housing development called the Avro City, which is an American-style housing development. And they'd have these pictures of these white families with their kids in the pool and stuff. And then they actually had a housing development called American Village, which I had to get a bunch of pictures of because I thought it was hilarious. But they actually had track-style housing. They looked like pretty much nothing I'd seen in California. The Kurds were awesome. There's a restaurant we'd go to when we go up to the Turkish border, and they had pictures of George Bush all over the restaurant. They talked about how much they thought Obama was weak and how much they missed George Bush already. It was pretty funny.
Well, from what I understand, most of the people in northern Iraq hated Saddam just as much as anybody else and wanted him out of there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The Kurds definitely doing a lot better now that Saddam's gone.
So you were you'd say that you were in a relatively pro-American type of area?
Well, I mean, that all depended because doing convoys, we were all over the country. So to get to that Kurdish area, we had to go through Mosul. And actually, this is Ramadan right now, or there was last year. Going through Mosul was kind of eventful during Ramadan. So it was kind of strange after having people trying to blow you up and shooting at you, all of a sudden you're in this place where everyone loves you.
What was that like? I mean, I know about the MRAPs and how they're just kind of these big, you know, heavy armored things that, you know, supposedly they can't get with a IED in the belly of them, right?
You know, I've actually never seen an MRAP actually directly hit. We had these things called the Duke systems and CDRJs, counter IEDs. They pretty much jam signals, so radio controlled IEDs didn't go off near us. And we have a bunch of countermeasures. You know, we had Rhino boxes for IR. We have Sparks machines for pressure plates and all that. So every time I saw IEDs go off, it actually went off on TCN. And those guys don't have the armor we did, so they kind of got messed up.
What's a TCN?
It's a third country national. Most of them, we would take like the convoys of 99 TCN trucks, third country nationals from Turkey, and they're Turkish truck drivers. They drive unarmored, just jangled trucks, and they bring fresh food, fresh water, stuff like that to American bases, and we distribute it from there. And first day of Ramadan, we had an IED attack where we had two of them get taken out on our convoy, and that was kind of a wake up call because we went a long time without having enemy contact, and then we had three IEDs.
And when that happened, I mean, I imagine that those unarmored trucks are just there's nothing left of them.
Our medic was really good. At that point, I wasn't being used as a medic anymore. I was driving a Cayman MRAP. But he managed to, one dude had some pretty bad injuries, and he stabilized, and we got him to a Merez, and he lived. I mean, he's got some scars. He's missing an eye, but his truck didn't make it. His truck just caught on fire. Yeah.
Now, when that happens, I mean, is it just like you're tolling along and then the IED goes off and that's it, or do you have people at, you know, were you actually being engaged, or was it just like they'd set the bomb and then walk away?
That particular moment, that night, we were driving through and we heard the first IED and we didn't know it went off in our convoy because we had another convoy passing us going north, we were going south. And we thought it might have been on them. We were hoping it was on them. And so we kept driving. Everyone called up saying, hey, I'm good. But the PCNs don't have radios, so they couldn't say they were hit. It happened in the first group of trucks, and it stopped the rest of the convoy. And as I came to a stop, and the second IED went off right behind me and took out another PCN truck. So, yeah, we didn't get any small arms or anything like that. We just kind of got stopped. And then the third one went off behind our last truck. So I said it seemed like it's pretty planned. I mean, we did things. I mean, they had convoys going through that area every night, so they knew exactly how to hit us. They had pretty much a bomb for each one of our serials. Our serials was a group of 30 trucks. That's how we rolled.
Now, when that go back to the first one, when that actually happened, what was your like, I guess, mental reaction to it? You know, how did that sort of, I guess, make it go from being, like you were saying, you've kind of like rolling around and you think, oh, this is pretty cool. It's a new country. I'm kind of like a tourist, to being like, yeah, guys, now this is for real. Where did that transition take place and sort of how was your mindset during that?
I mean, we had other incidents before. This was actually probably my 11th month in country, right before I was going to go home. Ramadan happened, and we ended up getting attacked every night we went out. Pretty much during Ramadan, but this was the first night of Ramadan, and I was thinking, like, great, these dudes are stepping up their game. The first thing that went through my mind, though, was I hope that's on that other convoy, because I don't want to deal with this right now.
But I mean, I'm saying, going back to the very first time that you were out there doing a mission, and then you actually had your first, you know, contact. That was sort of what I was directing it towards.
My first enemy contact actually was my first month in country. We had a suicide bomber go off in front of our convoy, and to be honest, when I passed it, everyone had to get a look, and I felt like I was looking at a car accident or something. It didn't really, like, I guess it didn't really hit me that, hey, this was, you know, an enemy act against me. It just was more like an observation, and so I guess it didn't really click that, hey, these people were trying to kill me until that second IED way later in my tour went off behind me, because pretty much our enemy contact was so sporadic and we felt so safe inside the MRAPs, and, you know, just that the, I mean, we got complacent. We really did. You know, people talk about the quality of the National Guard troops, you know, they're bad and all that, and I guess, you know what, it's true in some regards, because we ended up just, we had more fun than we did. Than we should have.
Well, tell me about that. Tell me about the. You say you had more fun than you should have. I mean, what were you guys doing when you weren't running missions? And you say you're only doing it three times a week. So that seemed to me
like. The base we were on had a fantastic chow hall, so we had great food. We had a really killer gym, so everyone would go to the gym. You know, if we didn't have a mission, people would go to the gym twice a day. We had internet in our rooms. We had Xboxes. You know, I'd play Guitar Hero when we weren't on mission. It didn't feel like, you know, the guys who invaded. You know, I felt like I was in a different Iraq almost. You know, like I didn't feel like I was actually in a war zone for the most part. I mean, our base it was so desolate, we didn't even get mortared. I mean, sometimes we'd be on the road, we'd go to other bases like Kirkuk, Fob Ware and Kirkuk. We'd get mortared a lot over there. Funny story, we actually went and saw Filter. The band Filter came and played there, and they actually had to be stopped because of a mortar attack, and they got Filter underneath Taco Bell because Taco Bell had an armored ceiling on it. So. But, yeah, I mean, it was, when we were doing missions, it was a lot of fun. Even on missions, you know, we got complacent. So we'd, pretty much just roll through and, you know, do our thing. It wasn't what I was expecting. You know, it wasn't like, slogging through the mud or, you know, what the guys in Afghanistan are doing right now. You know, we weren't on combat outposts where there was, nothing, you know. Those dudes are doing like a real deal mission. You know, we were kind of just rolling around in trucks.
Don't take this the wrong way, but from your description of being the base, I mean, it almost sounds like you're a summer camp. I mean,
We were like gypsy fobbits. We'd go to other fobs and eat their food, and but it didn't have hot water. We had to take 2 minute long showers. So when we go to other bases, and that was our vacation. And take a 10 minute long shower.
That's wild. Going back to some of the stuff you were talking about earlier, what was your kit that you'd go out with on your average mission? Some of the things that you had or didn't have that either you wanted to take along that you didn't have, or some of the stuff that they gave you that you're like, I don't need this.
Oh, I mean, we had fantastic equipment. That was one thing. And we had brand new MRAP trucks. Each truck had a Blue Force tracker. We all had counter IED jamming devices. Our weapon systems, you know, standard. We had 50 cals, M250 cals, and 240 Bravo machine guns. generally, all of us had M4s except for the 249 gunners, but really didn't really use them too much because it was all just truck-mounted weapons for the most part. We all had optics. We all had Tech 15 laser designators, Surefire weapon lights, all that. We really weren't hurting for equipment. We had more equipment than we probably needed. You know, we signed out for tons of things that we ended up not even using, but having inventory every month.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. What was your most enjoyable piece of equipment that you got to use over there? Whether it be a vehicle or a piece of kit or a machine gun or anything that you really liked?
You know, I always liked the PBS-14's night vision. I liked that in conjunction with the laser designator. Like if I was gunning, it just kind of gave me a kick knowing that these people at nighttime had no idea that they were getting their, you know, a machine gun aimed at them right now. You know, you see people sneaking around in the alleyways and they think that they're being stealthy. You know, they you know, like Ramadan, they like to pop out and from the alleyways and shoot at you and stuff. And you'd see them, you know, you'd see them like creeping around and blazing with green lasers, and they'd scurry off. I thought the night vision was really cool.
Yeah, I imagine that would be quite the advantage to. But I mean, you're basically talking about, I mean, for I guess a lot of it, so it's like a third world country. I mean, and you got there with such a high level of technology that. I guess I could see if you're in this big heavy vehicle why you say you could there's a potential for complacency because you think that you know you're basically invincible compared to these guys running around in a bathrobe with an AK-47.
Yeah, exactly. You know you look at what they got. You look at for the most part most of the times we were attacked by small arms it was literally they'd pop out for 2 seconds fire wildly and then run away. So, you know, you're fighting those guys and you're in a truck where it doesn't even scratch the paint when it hits it. It's kind of like, you know, you kind of like just laugh off.
Right. Yeah, it's just amazing. I mean, I guess you really felt that you had a pretty distinct advantage over pretty much anything that rolled out there.
Yeah, pretty much it was. Because that's saying, if you're in a fair fight, you're in the wrong fight, and that's how we rolled.
And then, like I said, on your downtime, when you spent a year out there, what were you looking forward to? I guess the most when you were getting ready to to come back, and you know, you said you got attacked in your convoy. You had a month left. I mean, where was your mind then when you were thinking, oh well, you know, here I only got a little while left, and now I'm, you know, what's going on?
Pretty much my family. Before I left, my girlfriend got pregnant, so we got married through proxy. I sent a letter signed from JAG, and she actually had her sister step in for me, so she's married to her sister for me. And we had a baby, and she was born 2 months prematurely, so I got to come out on leave and see her. Got to hold her once and flew back to Iraq. I was just thinking, you know, this isn't, you know, I'm going to go home and see my kids. These guys aren't going to blow me up.
All right, well, congratulations on the marriage and the baby. And you say you missed the family. What were you just going through your mind when you were getting ready to go home?
I was just kind of, I mean, like I said, I got married through papers, so I didn't really know what to expect. You know, the marital battleground's a lot different than, driving around Iraq. So, I was kind of nervous about that, and this is my first child too, so I didn't really, my wife had a good 6 months on me to learn all the tricks on how to be a parent. The first thing she did when I got home was she made me change a dirty diaper, and I didn't know how to do it. You know, I got poop everywhere, it smelled bad, and I was dry even, and she had to come save the day.
that's great, but hey, uh-oh, no poop threads on ARFCOM. So, when you were over there, what were some of the things, I mean, did you ever talk to any other ARFCOM members or run into anybody just out of curiosity?
You know what, actually, the transportation company that we worked with when we first got there, I think it was actually their commander or their XO, he's an officer, but he's actually an ARFCOM member. And I was actually going to buy a Surefire flashlight because the one I got issued kind of sucked, and ARFCOM member actually volunteered and sent me one. A couple guys sent me P-Mags and stuff, some magazines, and pogie, bait, beef jerky, stuff like that. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's real cool how everybody's, you know, paying it forward. You know, I guess when you're talking to the other guys, are you guys having, you know, arm wrestling matches over beans versus no beans and all that?
most people got arm wrestling matches over the cigars and playing cards that people sent.
Right. And are you scheduled to go back at all, or are you pretty much done with your commitment, or how does that whole thing work out?
Well, my unit's actually scheduled to get ready to go to Afghanistan pretty soon. I can't really give dates or anything like that. But I'm coming towards the end of my enlistment. I've done 8 years, and my wife wants me to decide very carefully. She's, you know, she's supportive of whatever choice I make, but it's leaning towards, I don't think she wants me to go again.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's obviously understandable with a new, you know, with a new baby on the way and all that. What are some of the stuff you like to do, you know, now that you're back home and you've, you know, what was sort of your unwinding process, I guess? So now I'm home. I got the new wife and kid. What was your transition like?
You know, it was kind of difficult at first because, I mean, it's like a brand new life. You know, before I came home, before I deployed, I lived in a party house with my cousin, you know, drank and played video games and just pretty much screwed off, went to college and things like that, and came home. All of a sudden, I've got a family and a wife, and it was a big change of pace. I have to say, you know, it's adjusted pretty well. We're getting along pretty good. Yes, you know, things are doing pretty well.
Well, that's good to hear. I really appreciate you coming on. Do you have anything else you'd like to add, or if we have any calls, if you want to, let me scroll down the thread here and see if we got anybody here asking anything. Anything you'd like to add, or?
I just want to say support all those guys in Afghanistan right now because those dudes are doing the real fight.
Well, I appreciate it, and definitely we appreciate your call and your service, and thanks so much, and we're looking forward to speaking with you. If you ever like to come on again, let us know how you and your family are doing. We certainly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, Ben.
Thank you very much. Have a great day. And that was our friend, specialist Lars Reichenbach, an Air15.com member of the National Guard. And we do appreciate his discussing his experiences with the audience, and I'm just going over some emails here, but got some interesting stuff going on. Let's see here. I apologize, folks. I got an email coming in. Okay, going to the zombie tip of the week. This is maybe a little bit shorter show than you're used to, but I apologize. Coming from the Star Tribune out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. We had a story from here actually not too long ago about the big wildlife DNR or shooting range they're putting out there. But again, here we go. Minneapolis will pay $165,000 to zombies. They say they will pay seven people who were jailed after a street theater protest. The Minneapolis City Attorney's Office has decided to pay seven zombies and their attorney $165,000. The payout, approved by the City Council on Friday, settles a federal lawsuit the seven filed after they were arrested and jailed for 2 days for dressing up like zombies in downtown Minneapolis on July 22, 2006 to protest, quote, mindless consumerism, unquote. When arrested at the intersection of Hennepin Avenue and 6th Street, most of them had thick white powder and fake blood on their faces and dark makeup around their eyes. They were walking in a stiff, lurching fashion and carrying four bags of sound equipment to amplify music from an iPod when they were arrested by police, who said they were carrying equipment that simulated weapons of mass destruction. However, they were never charged with any crime. The U.S. District judge dismissed their lawsuit, but it was resurrected in February by a three-judge panel on the 8th U.S. Court of Appeals, and they concluded that police lacked probable cause to arrest the seven, a decision setting the stage for a federal trial this fall. The settlement means there'll be no trial. Here's a quote from one of the zombies. I feel great that the city is being held accountable for the actions of their police, said one of the seven zombies. He said he and his friends were performing street theater when they were arrested. He is a PhD candidate in sociology. And also they said that unfortunately the zombies had no IDs. Going on to the next page, I don't know if that's cause for arrest, but I don't think many zombies do carry ID. But at any rate, the four men and three women, all of whom lived in the Twin Cities at the time, were playing the role of the zombies to illustrate their belief that people buy and rely on new products as a replacement for real interaction. They were making their zombie-like way along a Nicollet Mall around 7 when police told them to turn down their music and keep a distance from the bystanders. Later, a young girl with her father became frightened by the lurching zombies, according to court records. Police asked for the zombies' identification, and then when most said they had none on them, they were told they would be detained. One of the zombies later testified that Police Sergeant E.T. Nelson told the zombies at the police station that he didn't care about their constitutional rights, using two obscenities. Quote, "These words were seared into my mind. I'll never forget them," said one of the gentlemen who now lives in San Francisco. They said they go on to talk about their jail experience, saying it was horrible, but I can imagine that it's not nearly as bad as being a member of the shambling hordes of the undead. So that there is quite the stories from our good friends at the Zombie Central. Continuing on, We have what did you do today to prep for the zombie invasion. Men here inventoried and relocated their mags. Also, some Mountain Dew was purchased. One gentleman here bought his girl new shoes for school. We keep continuing going. We worked on the zombie wagon or the bug-out vehicle, replacing a headlight. Scrolling down, we have some CBs. We have some the bumpers, so we got some people fixing up their vehicles. Always nice to see. So at any rate, bought 6 cans of Hormel turkey chili. That certainly is, you might be able to keep the zombies away just from the smell. People are adding ammo, lifting weights, all sorts of fun things for the zombie apocalypse. One of the things that I just wanted to make sure that you guys mentioned before we call it a night is please be sure to click on the link for the Special Operations Support Raffle on air15.com. It is only $10 to enter, and all the money goes directly to help Special Forces operators on the front lines fighting for our freedom. Also, in the air15.com newsletter, on the newsletter form, it says, with the popularity and success of the first newsletter, this month we're looking to continue the format and even expand a bit. We've added a new few sections here, including training tips, giveaway results, the NRA ILA news, and they've also changed the enumeration as well as with the newsletter. This is issue number 1008, representing the year and month. It'll be a better issue for keeping track to know exactly when they came out based on the issue number. We briefly touched on the site updates, but if you look at your AR15.com website interface, thread tracking. This month, the site staff introduced a new feature for team members, the thread tracking system, that focuses the user experience as it will store the last known position within a thread for each and every thread visible. So, in other words, it will store your last reply on a page, and then when you click on it, it'll take you right to where you responded instead of having to scroll the whole way through. As an extra benefit, Gold team members and higher also have access to a bookmark feature, which allows any reply within a thread to be bookmarked and provide another entry point into a discussion. There's one user-defined bookmark allowed per thread. This provides users with the power to follow multiple discussions at their last read entry or bookmark without having to recall the specific location. Also, AR15.com recently introduced a travel service for AR15.com members. This gives team members access to a travel agent that has a relationship with AR15.com. Many people have taken advantage of the service with everything from weekend getaways to destination weddings, etc. The agent will now be working directly for AR15.com members and will have much greater availability. For those of not familiar, basically a travel agent is going to take all the hard stuff out of facilitating your travels. So make sure you check out the AR15.com travel forum for details to be posted in the coming days, and they'll be able to give you some comparisons when you take your next trip. One of the great things that I saw was the article here called Training Tips Be Ready at Home by Chris Fry. And we're talking about some of the essential items that he feels necessary to have rapidly to prepare to protect the home from any intruders or even looters in a hurricane-type disaster. But he's got some very good basics going on here. But these are just some stuff that most people are going to have around the house, or at least should. Number one, a cell phone. If power is out or has been cut off, the home phone will not work, and the top priority is contacting 911 to call for assistance. whether it's law enforcement or EMS. Two, spare ammunition for any firearm. He says, I may have my shotgun ready to go or my pistol or a carbine or even combination. Because of this, I can't have three separate ready bags for each individual weapon platform. So the bag I utilize needs to have multiple pockets within which I can store extra shotgun buckshot, at least one spare pistol magazine, and one spare carbine magazine. That way, it doesn't matter which gun you grab under stress, you've got extra ammo. Three, medical supplies. If I'm involved in some type of home protection scenario, there's a good chance that me or one of my family members may be injured. This could involve actual gunfire injuries or something more common, like he says, tripping over the dog or otherwise. Either way, have pressure dressings, tourniquets, and homeostatic agents can go a long way in protecting you and your family after an incident's occurred while you wait for potentially emergency medical services to come assist you. Light source, whether or not you believe in a gun-mounted light or not, sneaking around in the dark during a power outage or power cutoff is not conducive to effective home protection. So make sure you have a light source necessary for navigation, identification of possible threats, or lack thereof. And it's also a good idea to have both weapons mounted as well as non-weapons mounted because, you know, it's not, obviously you don't want to point your weapon mounted light at your friends and families and, family pets and so on and so forth. An edge tool. Nobody knows what can or happen, types of fight or disaster occurring. So make sure you have some sort of good edge tool available that's common that you can use not only potentially for personal protection, but also if you have to break through walls or out of windows or that type of thing, and if you have to escape after a violent storm or some sort of situation like that. Also, we have short-term food and water, so make sure that you have a variety of, you know, basic supplements to get you through, you know, a couple days or even a couple of weeks to make sure that you take care of the basics as far as, you know, food and nutrition go. You know, the government potentially recommends, you know, they used to always say just have 3 days. Well, you can even go on the FEMA websites and even the federal gov is saying, it's probably a good idea to have, you know, 2 weeks worth of food and medicine and most importantly, water. I know where we are down here in South Florida with, you know, hurricane season getting to its peak. It's certainly important to be stocked up for the potential of being without food or water for an extended period of time. Again, in the newsletter, Joe DeBurgelis from the NRA, whose screen name is Direct Action. He's got his article here. You guys should really check it out. It's a nice piece regarding his efforts with the working with AR15.com and getting on the on that and the future of our rights and everything else. Continue. There's a couple of new products on here I want to talk about real quick before we start to wrap up. But the AR15.com logo is on the custom-built AR stands. Their stands can be used to hold your rifle, whether you're going to be cleaning it or just displaying it. So check that out. It's on AR15.com. You can go to the store link, and you can scroll down for these products. Also, the POF USA has a new product out called the Roller Cam Pin. The POF USA Roller Cam Pin reduces friction and drag of the bolt carrier by rolling as the action moves. It is NP3 coated, and the body is mil-spec hard chrome plated. This allows the pin to operate without the need to lube. There is a version for POF piston driver ARs, as well as a DI conversion kit that comes with modified gas key, as this pin requires greater clearance between the bolt carrier and gas key. MSRP on that's $20 for the pin or $45 for the kit. Also, the Demon Tactical Quick Pin. The Demon Tactical Quick Pin's design eliminates the movement between the upper and lower receiver of AR-15-style firearms, while also aligning the bolt carrier group with the buffer tube. The quick pin replaces the rear takedown pin and expands inside of the upper receiver, pulling it tight against the lower receiver. No tools are necessary to remove or install the pin once set up. Operators can quickly remove the pin when field stripping and reinstall even when wearing gloves. MSRP on that product is $40. And there's a couple links there for more info and the installation guide for that. One thing that y'all might be interested in for keeping track of your firearm collection is the NM Collector software. It says, keep track of every aspect of your gun collection with this database program conveniently loaded on a USB flash drive. Create detailed files on individual guns with model number, serial number, purchase date, purchase price, sales price, and appraised value. Even lets you attach photos to each entry. Searchable database has a statistics feature that lets you track both the appraised and realized value of individual firearms or your entire collection. Print hard copy reports and personalized gun tags, even customize the screen appearance, modify or add field headings, and add your own drop-down values. It runs off the USB drive so it can be plugged into any computer. The program can also be installed on one computer. The drive is built into a wooden carrying case with handy lanyard and free upgrades downloadable from internet with purchase. That is available for $49.99. Also, some of the stuff that I cover on the news segment you can now find here on the NRA ILA news link on the AR-15 ARFCOM newsletter. Feel free to click on that link. Don't forget, again, the $10 donation for the minimum donation for the special operators fund for those battle implements that Joe and I talked about. And also, Joe and I always talk about the key to voting is triggerthevote.org. Make sure that during these big midterm elections approaching, I know we have some primaries tomorrow. I've got to go vote, but please make sure you visit triggerthevote.org to learn how you can help get involved. We all need to do our best to get out there and vote and get our coworkers, friends, and family out to vote for the cause of freedom. Remember that you probably won't agree with everything your local politician has to say, but we still need to vote for the best possible candidates that are advancing the cause of freedom and scaling back the tentacled beast that has become our government on every level. I'd like to thank AR15.com for hosting the show. I'd like to thank my producer, and most importantly, thanks to the Radio Free ARFCOM fans and listeners, and be sure to accidentally the whole show to all your friends. And please visit AR15.com's site sponsor links and support the site by purchasing a team membership in the AR15.com store. As always, I encourage the listening audience to submit show topics, ideas, and potential guests as soon as possible so I can book them ahead of time. Be sure to tune in next week for another great show. But until then, this has been your Radio Free ARFCOM. Good night, and thanks for listening.
The chair is against the wall. The chair is against the wall. John has a long mustache. John has a long mustache.